Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we've got Rich Summerfield with us. Rich is CTO at Summise. Well, welcome to the show, Rich. It's really good to have you join us today. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, hey, Ben. Yeah, thanks for having us, really. It's interesting to discuss some points, but yeah, really good to speak to you.
Yeah, we've got an interesting conversation ahead. But before we get into that, let's get a little bit of background on yourself and actually just what Summise is as a business, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so Summise is in the legal sector, legal tech, and really like the headline is we're aiming to make legal easy. Legal as a field's quite interesting. You look at some other similar adjacent fields like finance with the fintech and stuff like that. And I think the way we see it, the way legal is at the moment with legal tech, it's probably a little bit behind that growth curve of fintech. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a bit more opportunity, a bit more white space, a bit more kind of innovation to come in legal tech. So, you know, that's where we are. And like I say, trying to make legal easy with technology. So very exciting, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's already really interesting, this, because I've got a lot that I could take just from that introduction. There's something that you mentioned there, make legal easy, and it's a little bit behind in kind of like the tech curve there, or the tipping point of technology. And I just wonder if you've got any thoughts on why it's kind of slow on the uptake as a space for technology or new technology.
So it's a great question. I mean, I just like a bit of context. I've been in technology since I can remember, since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Always been interested in computers and stuff, and we'll kind of go into that. But I'm not legally trained, and when I joined Summise was really my first exposure really to like what's the legal industry is like and the legal tech. So I can only kind of speak from my perspective and what I've learned along that journey. But I think, like I said, I touched on like finance and fintech. I think was when you look at that as a sector, you know, where are we today versus 10, 15 years ago? Mm. You know, people are paying for stuff on the phone or on the watch. You know, there's access to loans, you know, bank accounts. The whole thing is very different than the brick and mortar of 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all these new startups that have come in with innovative ideas, like disrupted things, processes and practices and approaches. And then the more traditional banks, they've obviously got a whole load of capabilities in a certain area, but they're not standing still either. You know, they're looking to these markets and working out where they can advance. So bring that towards legal. I think as a pure consumer, you know, I sit in my seat and I think like how and when do I touch legal services? When I move house, I don't know, when I sign a will, there's kind of very, very few. And I probably wouldn't even know where to start. You know, if I had some kind of claim or something, I wouldn't even really know where to go. So I think immediately you've got a big difference there between finance and legal. As finance is it's a much clearer and general about where to start, I think. And then legal, it isn't. So with that legal as a service mindset, you know, how can I as a consumer engage with legal? How can I as a business user engage with my legal team, or as a client to a private practice, how do I kind of start that conversation? How do I engage? How do I get the most out of it? I think that's really where we kind of think a lot about, is that as a service mindset, how can you start that process? So it's access to legal. It's around how effective it is. And I think really where Summise is really trying to tackle this problem from is at that sweet spot. So how can we make the legal team more efficient, more effective through technology? How can we narrow the gap between a legal professional, whether that be on a team or private practice? How can we narrow that gap between them and their clients? How can we make that process easier? So a lot of legal seems to run on Word, Excel, email, and phone calls.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine. You know, none of those tools are purpose-built for legal, but they're pretty effective and people are making them work. Well, you know, you look at, for example, the email. How does that work? Well, you engage with someone from legal, you're probably going to send them an email with a contract attachment and say, please review this. The first thing the legal team's going to do is ask for some context. You know, how important is this? How urgent is this? you know, all these kind of questions. Well, immediately there, if you can shortcut that process, so immediately when you send a contract to this legal inbox, you immediately reply back automated-wise, reply back to that the sender and say, please answer these three or four quick questions. Give me some context. How urgent is it? And that's before it even hits the inbox of the legal team. At that point, you've saved, 5 minutes maybe 10 minutes, but it's time and effort, repetition. It's the same question you're typing out again and again. I think that's just one kind of aspect of improvements we can kind of see. I think another ones is around, again, Word isn't purpose-built for contracts and legal, so how can we make that more effective? So we've got, Sumaiza's got a Word add-in. So it's where the lawyer is anyway. And then how can we make them more effective through, perhaps it's a case of reusing, or they've got a favourite clause they've written like 3 weeks ago. They know it's in the contract somewhere. Typically what they're going to do, they're going to search the hard disk for 20 minutes.
Yep.
Either give up or eventually find it, then copy and paste that out of the original into the new contract they're creating. It makes complete sense, but at the fingertips, if we can make that available in a Word add-in with a quick search in the add-in, make it available, a one button to insert into the contract, then the time saved when you multiply that out is just astronomical. Again, we have that capability, and that's really kind of the stuff we focus on. And I think the other main part of the Sumaiza suite that we tackle is really around contract review. So can we produce a quick summary of a contract that then we tap into the legal expertise of the human to say, these are the things we think are red flags. These are the things we think look good. This is what contravenes this particular client's risk profile. Produce that in a summary. We're not eliminating the lawyer at all and all their experience and their skills. We're just kind of shortcutting part of the process, giving them a quick summary. That means they can work more effectively and quicker with their clients. That makes the clients happier. And the whole thing means clients are more likely to engage with legal, which is a good thing for SMEs particularly, because you've got a lot less risk that you're exposed to, because it's always going through the legal team. And then a client's more engaged with using the legal team, it means you can do it more effectively, more cost effectively. And then it really, it's a bit cliche to say, but it really does feel like a win-win at that point.
Yeah.
Clients getting a better service, more effective, probably cheaper, and the lawyers not doing that fairly laborious, low value work on a repeated basis, and they get to focus more on what they started being a lawyer in the first place, which is experience and guidance, really.
Yeah, blimey. There's a lot to take from this. We'll come on to your history and your background in a little while. There's one question that I really want to ask, which is, what are some of the risks involved with this? Because legal's quite a, everything has to be watertight, doesn't it? So if you're automating things, and what are some of the risks involved in this space?
Yes, I think where we start our thinking from is that the lawyer, the human, they're the expert in the room.
Yeah.
No question. Yeah. So start with that as your premise. And then you're looking for what can the technology do to support? And I think the key thing we talk about, so a lot of people talk about AI as in artificial intelligence, which is effectively replacing the human capability of producing results or whatever that be. We really much more think around augmented intelligence.
Right, okay.
So how can we bring together all the good stuff of humans, experience, guidance, judgment, context awareness? How can we bring all those bits together, and relationships, obviously, with individuals? Bring those together with what computers are great at, which is pattern recognition, repeated task. Computer generally doesn't complain if you asked it to do the same task over and over again 1,000 times. A human gets pretty bored after the third or fourth time. So it's really kind of like, that's really where we start from, is trying to bring those, the good bits of both together, and then superpower. So like I say, on terms of the summaries we produce, the intention, and when we speak to our customers as well, is this is there to speed you up, but it's not there to replace you. So you're always the expert, and this is really just kind of to help you. Again, in many cases with a human paralegal, you're always going to want to skim read the results. Mm-hmm. That's just what you do. I think the same kind of mindset would be true in what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting because, you know, you mentioned that you didn't have much history in this legal space before you started at Surmise. So is your role as CTO just making things happen, essentially? And, you know, do you get a lot of advice or insight from legal people to know how the industry works? That was such an awfully worded question, but it made sense in my head, Ridge. Sorry.
I understand what you're asking. So I think, like, we're really fortunate that our CEO, Tom, he was a ex-GC. Not only that, but he was involved in a number of fast growth startup companies. He was the GC at those as well. So,
yeah,
you know, really interesting insight when you've got limited resources. You know, how can you be lean and mean and effective, yeah, as a GC in a small company? Is different, I think, than how can you be GC in a more established company with much more resources on hand and, you know, everything's, well, not everything, but there's a chunk of things already figured out. So I think that experience from Tom is incredibly valuable to us. And then as a team, you know, not just me, but as a team, we regularly join the sales demos that we do.
Right.
We regularly speak to customers on, like, support calls or, you know, onboarding calls. We, as a team, well, we like to call ourselves more of a product team rather than a development team. I think that's really an interesting shift in thought, is that we want to make the best product we can based on what we talked about, with, you know, where Surmise is coming from. How can we do that? Well, the only way you can do that is talking and listening to domain experts, people who are involved in those processes, who kind of do those things daily. Listen to those, ask questions, try and figure out what, you know, wind it all the way back to what's the core of what you're trying to achieve, not necessarily what steps you use today. So, yeah, we take a lot of input from, like I say, customers, potential customers, you know, just generally surveying the market, seeing what's going on, keeping the ear to the ground. And I think all those bits kind of feed in with our, as a product team, our knowledge on how to build things, how you might piece things together. And I think if you can collect all those in one circle, in one sphere, in one small collection of people, I think it's incredibly powerful. I think it's just incredibly powerful if you can get all those bits together in, like, a small, motivated, cohesive team.
Yeah.
You can, it almost looks like a superpower from the outside, I think, but really it's just a case of it, you know. If you've got everything to hand, those millions of decisions you make as a developer on a daily basis, you've already got the answers ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really core to how we work, but generally how we see product development. And then what my role in that is, I'm part of the team. You know, I might be talking to customers slightly more than some of the other people on the team, but I think it's critical that everyone on the team kind of steps up into that same position, that they understand why we're doing things, how people are using it. And and we don't kind of pigeonhole people into just writing code. That's really critical to us. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to find out a little bit about your history now. So if you can kind of rewind time to the day you were born. No, I'm joking. to when you started your career. And then just think of kind of how you've navigated to get to where you are as CTO. I think that would be really interesting.
Yes. I mean, just to give a bit of context, I was born late 70s, really late 70s. Just my dad bought us an Amstrad. So it was a UK computer.
Excellent.
An Amstrad. Yeah, fairly basic, but it was, you're really quite, like, almost at the bare metal. You know, when you power on your phone these days, everything's ready to go. It's a, you know, the apps are all there. You know, on that, in that generation, the 80s, it was, you got dumped at a command prompt and it was, you kind of had to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, with, like, was that 8 or 10 or whatever age I was. So it's kind of like scan the manual, trying to work out how to do things, loads of trial and error. And I think the bit that kind of I struggled with, I think, at the time was, I'd go, you know, the internet wasn't available at that point, you know, and I'd go to the library on a weekly basis and look for computer books. And in a kind of a small village, the number of computer books in the library at that time was extremely limited. So quite frustrating, really. But, you know, you get to play with things and learn and discover. Fast forward then to university. did a computer science degree, and that coincided. I went to university in 98, and at that time, that was my first touch of the internet.
Right, really, wow. Everywhere.
And yeah, I mean, mind was blown at that point. Yeah. You know, all that struggling to find information, and people are just putting this available for free, and you can find it. And that was a huge, as for many people, really, once you discover the internet, but it's just a huge point that, like, all this information at your fingertips. And I think that really ties into what I enjoy most, is like that thirst for knowledge, discovery, kind of finding new things out. You know, I love listening to the podcast and all the rest of it. So that's kind of like university. And then coming out of that, went through a few different roles, telecoms, and then eventually settled in a company that were doing some really low-level software on Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Kind of got to learn a lot from that. Then at the same company, this is around the early 2010s, a lot of like technology was talking about mobile, social, you know, all that kind of stuff. And as a company, we were quite deep into Windows technology, but we were also looking like, how can we be relevant in this next wave of mobile and stuff? So as part of that, I got asked to head up a research team, trying to think through what we could possibly do, what was relevant for us. That was really interesting. And then eventually what we decided as a company was we wanted to expand to another location and looked all over the world, tried to work out where that would best be. And we chose as a company, Silicon Valley.
Right.
And as part of that, with my role in the research team, it was a natural thing for me to go out there and then start up a team over there. So we had a small sales office at that time, went out with my family. So two young kids as well, moved out there. Started a product team over there. That kind of grew. Eventually, after a couple of years, came back. We as a business closed down that Silicon Valley office just through with things we'd discovered. But my experience being there was just incredibly valuable. They're just very, very different to what I was used to. The mindset, everything's go faster, ruthlessly attack. I remember this was early on. We'd recruited the first guy out there very early on, and we were playing around with some ideas. We were kind of exploring some ideas. We had something kind of very roughly working. We came into the office the next day, me and this other guy, and on TechCrunch, you know, the lead article was around, there was a brand new startup that was doing something, and what they were doing was identical to what we were doing.
Right.
And I, just based off what I was used to, kind of sat back in my chair and thought, oh, well, you know, somebody else is doing it. We'll have to go and find another idea. And the bit that was, it just like, again, it made me think completely differently. The guy we'd recruited, he was a Silicon Valley native. His first thought, and he said, was brilliant. Someone's validated the idea. Let's go faster.
Yeah.
And I think that difference is probably, I'd say, was the best way I had summed up my entire experience in Silicon Valley.
Wow.
I can just looking at you now on the call, like it is just mind-blowingly different, isn't it?
It is though, yeah. That mindset is completely, like you mentioned, completely different, isn't it? I don't know whether that's something to do with like the UK as a whole, but or compared to Silicon Valley. But what is Silicon Valley actually like? I mean, you mentioned it was faster and, you know, more harder than what you're used to. But in day to day life, what's it actually like? I mean, I can't picture it. I mean, I've seen, obviously, there's like sitcoms based around Silicon Valley that are on the internet now, but I can't imagine what it's actually like being there. So. What is it actually like? It blows my mind to even imagine. I imagine some crazy place.
Yeah, the thing that jumps out immediately is the weather. I mean, California is an incredible place. Like, there's a huge amount of diversity just in California alone, never mind the state's total. But the thing that really hits you straight away, coming from Britain particularly, is the weather. It's pretty much constant.
Really?
You know, a nice 25 to 30 degrees. It's not too humid. It's just like that every day. So, you know, like I said, I went out there with my young family. My youngest at the time was 6 months old, but just meant you could plan. Like, you could plan 3 weeks ahead and you knew the weather was going to be good. So I think that's like the biggest bit.
Yeah.
That's nothing to do with Silicon Valley necessarily itself. I think the other bit was we kind of obviously made friends and talked to other people. And, you know, 95, close to 100% of people you spoke to were in a tech company that you've probably heard of.
Yeah.
Again, compared back to the Brits and you kind of saying, yep, you kind of speak under your breath when it's our work in IT.
Yeah.
And that the conversation just dies at that point, really. So yeah, that was interesting as well. But like getting into, you know, the location, it's just, you're driving down the street and you're seeing Apple on one side of the road and it's Google on the other side of the road.
And it's crazy. Just,
it's like a kid in a sweet shop, really, for, yeah, if you're interested in tech, it really is. And then when you get actually into doing the work and speaking to people, I think, like you said, like intensity, there's just an intensity around things. You know, there's this drive. I think the other thing I thought was coupled with that was just this like ruthless mindset in terms of attacking the problem. So whereas what I was typically more used to, you come across a problem, you know, maybe on a Thursday, and you think, oh man, this is too big. I don't really want to wrestle with this today. Let's have a meeting next week, early next week sometime. You know, you eventually book it for Wednesday, Thursday, whatever. And you've kind of lost all that time.
Yeah.
I think another big difference is people we worked with over there. It was kind of, you've got a problem. It's like, stop everything. Let's everybody get together in a room. Let's whiteboard this out. Let's just attack this problem as hard as we possibly can, as quick as we possibly can. Let's see what falls out. You know, and it's really going from soup to nuts. So let's go right back to the starting point to work out why we've got this problem in the first place. And let's play through that. And let's just keep on playing that through as many times as we possibly can until we can then see the resolution. And I think the reason that made such a difference doing it that way is quite often you'll discover new things as part of that process that then meant the other things you're working on that were actually fine, but they actually don't make sense anymore, or that's the wrong direction.
Right.
So then you kind of go back. You look at that, the Toyota approach to manufacturing, you know, with the Andon cord, which is where something goes wrong, you stop it immediately.
Yeah.
Versus a lot of the other kind of like car manufacturers will fix up the problems after the car comes off the production line. You know, we'll fix those up later.
Mm.
But then you've got this kind of repeated, this problem's going to continue to happen, and you kind of spend a lot of time further downstream. I think that was, again, that intensity was really focused on let's figure out the problem as early as we possibly can, go as quick as we possibly can, because we're in a race with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, that ruthless intensity, it was tough, you know, it was draining, but equally the kind of like the satisfaction you get out of that is great. And that fitted really well with me.
Mm.
And that's what I enjoyed the most, was kind of attacking the problems and doing the thing that makes sense based on what you know on day 50, rather than kind of trying to hang on to what you thought was correct on day one, because you've already signed off some document to say that's what you're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you still follow that ruthless intensity mindset now, or did that kind of slowly fade as soon, like the further you got away from Silicon Valley?
The team I work in, that's still core to how I think about things and how I operate. I find it really quite stressful at times when I was in, you know, over in Silicon Valley, that intensity, you know, you do have to kind of stop and breathe sometimes. And it's really, like I say, intense, difficult, all the rest of it, all the stuff that comes with that. I think I'd like to think I've kind of toned that down a bit with the team that we work with today, you know, so they don't feel quite that same pressure and all the rest of it. But I think the mindset is absolutely critical to what we do. It's how we think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I say, everybody's got an equal voice. Everybody's experience needs to come together. Let's not sit on things. Let's not cling on to what we decided ages ago. If something's wrong, it's wrong. Let's fix that as quickly. And so like kind of bringing that mindset 100% to what we do. In fact, I was quite fortunate that when I came back from Silicon Valley, I stayed with the same company for a couple of years and was fortunate enough to, we were part of it. We formed a new team, a couple of us who I'd not worked with before, but we formed this team. We recruited a few other people. And I think that, you know, that I was like the tech lead on that team, but that my experiences from Silicon Valley, I brought into that team and it worked well with the rest of the team as well.
Right.
And so we kind of had that feel with our team there. And then because I'd worked previously with Tom and Dave, the co-founders of Smize, we just kind of started a coffee conversation around what it could look like if I was to swap companies.
Wow.
And really what the things that jumped out immediately were around, you know, legal as a sector has got some way to go. You know, there's innovation that's available to, you know, not just us, but, you know, to anybody that's producing legal tech, the innovation's available. It's certainly interesting work. It's a new field. and, you know, what works best in a startup product team is that kind of that ruthless intensity.
Yeah.
You know, so it was almost a case of like, I can do what I enjoy at the moment as part of a larger organization, probably not having a huge impact, but, you know, get paid and kind of get to enjoy life. Or I could take all the things I love, switch company, switch sector, and experience that 100% of the time. So, you know, wrestled with it a little bit about whether that made sense to make the jump with a family and all the rest of it. But in terms of like personally, it was obviously the right choice, and been here now for almost 2 years and loved every minute of it.
Yeah, brilliant. And what's the future and of the development team at Surmise, and what's the product vision going forward?
So the development team wise, you know, the team we've got today, it's small, really. We've got, you know, it's a very capable team. We all work really well together. And I think there's something around retaining that for as long as you possibly can. That small, really closely knit, really collaborative team. Once you've gone beyond, 8 to 10 people, the dynamics change quite a bit. So I think product development team wise, we want to work out how we maintain that feel as we grow. So I think it's a case of bringing people in who are culture first. Culture is the most important bit. I mean, absolutely. When you're recruiting people, talk about rats, like recruit attitudes, teach skills. And it's 100% the right thing to think. You know, we can, you know, if you haven't perhaps used the technology we use today, that's really not a problem. You can figure that out. You know, people can learn that, not a problem. But if you've got an attitude that doesn't gel with us, it's not good for you and it's not good for us as well. So I think product development team, we are definitely growing. If you've got individuals like us that love to do work, love to use their skills, but also love to understand what they're doing and why, you know, why are we doing this? Who are we doing it for? How are we doing it? All those kind of questions. If you love that stuff, then I think, you know, companies like Surmise and other, you know, companies who have the same mindset are incredible opportunities. You know, the amount of stuff you learn in a short space of time is incredible. Whether that's a stepping stone to your next part of your career, or whether it be somewhere where you feel home for a long time. But yeah, you know, like I said, we are growing, but that culture first really is just critical.
Yeah, it feels like in this space there's a lot of new developments that are about to be made. It seems like one of the industries, it seems like in this space it's a little bit behind, like we mentioned at the start, it's a little bit behind the curve, but it seems like there's a lot to be done. Yeah, a lot of tech to be introduced, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels that way. I mean, as a tech person, you look at every single problem as like, how can I apply a computer to this? You know, maybe not always the right choice necessarily, but it definitely feels like there's opportunities all over the place in legal. And I think, you know, there's obviously deep debates in the legal sector around billable hours. You know, you can kind of understand why that is how a lot of companies work. It makes sense given the incentives and the context that a lot of companies are in. But you look to the future and most, if not all, sectors are moving more towards the as a service style approach of delivery. Yeah. So whether that be, you know, finance as a service, you know, a lot of SMEs perhaps don't need that, you know, salaried financial team that's large. They don't necessarily need a large legal team, and all the way through. So how can you do that as an SME? Well, it's as a service, having stuff on tap. So like I say, HR as a service, finance as a service, and I think legal as a service, that's where we see things. And then playing that backwards, how do you get to that point? Well, it's around having legal services that are easy to engage with. They're cost effective, cost efficient. You know, really the way we see it is you can't provide those cost effective, predictable as a service guarantees without technology. If you've not got the technology, it goes much more back towards the billable hour, which is you want a contract, I'll produce you a contract, not a problem. And it takes as long as it takes. And then there's that trust around the fact that you're not wasting time and charging billable hours. But it's kind of, it comes back all the way to that one. I think, like I say, if you start with the as a service future, you can only do that with tech. I think really Surmise's journey is we see that. So how can we today someone in legal's not using any technology, what's the first step we can make to help them? Whatever that is, we can introduce to their current process. So they're probably in Word, so we need to be in Word. You know, simple things like that is how can we make the easiest step for them? Once they're on that journey with us, then they can learn from us, adapt more features, and then before they know it, they're kind of a much bigger user of our legal tech, perhaps other legal tech as well, but our legal tech. And then as we continue on the journey, we're slightly ahead, obviously, with the features and where we're looking at it, but they can kind of come with us on that journey to that point where, you know, they've got better view of risk across the business, they're more engaged with anybody that's using their services, they're more predictable about how they can deliver those services, and all the other good stuff that comes with as a service.
I'm just wondering, maybe to wrap up here, I've got a couple more questions, but there's one thing that I keep thinking about whilst we've been talking is, where do you learn about this stuff? Because it's moving all the time, and it's quite a specific area. It's quite a niche area to work in. So where do you go for your resources? You mentioned podcasts. Where else do you look?
I mean, podcasts is huge for me. I love listening to podcasts when I'm doing the dishes and all the rest of it. And I, you know, whether it be from like legal tech podcasts all the way through to like short story fiction and all the rest. Yeah. I think the podcast is such a useful medium to kind of absorb information, listen to different things, connect the dots in completely different sectors. I think that kind of innovation, we look at innovation perhaps slightly, it's not really that light bulb moment, really. It's really just connecting different experiences, different dots. So that's why diversity is really important in companies as well. Is
absolutely.
Someone comes with some construction experience and you connect that to your experience in the motor industry, you know, pair two innovations between the two, which would be completely disconnected, but you put those two bits together and you've got that innovation that makes complete sense in a different sector. So I think, like I say, podcasts are super important to me and a lot of the people on the team as well. I think internet in general is an incredible source of information. Just listening in, having that kind of ear to the ground, whether that be on legal tech review sites, news sites, whatever, just looking about how other people are thinking about the problem. I think a lot of it's really about, it's not necessarily how the product looks, but you really want to hear how they think about the problem. Like, what is it they're trying to do? How are they trying to do it? Connecting into, I mean, the most valuable source is the people, you know, the legal professions themselves. Like, what are they doing? What are they thinking? Mm-hmm. You know, where do they think things need to go? I and the rest of the team regularly are on conversations with people all the way from really small law departments. You know, what are they struggling with today? Mm. All the way up to like, you know, global private practice law firms and what do they experience? So it's just kind of keeping that open ear, trying to connect the dots and then kind of playing that back. And then coupled to what we said before, like kind of ruthlessly going through that in, you know, iterative cycle about, does this make sense for us? Can we help in that particular area? How would we deliver that? How would we get the customer onboarded? Connecting all those bits together, like I say, with those sorts of information is how we see we can be most effective and how we can deliver most value.
That's really interesting. And that's really interesting. I could literally sit here all day, Rich, and chat to you about this. It feels like we've just scraped the surface. But there's one thing that stuck out to me was, in this day and age with startups, you know, a lot of startups nowadays, particularly because of COVID, are all working remotely, basically, and they don't, saving money by not having that physical premise. So if, when you moved to Silicon Valley, if it was today, would you have moved out there or would you have just had a distributed team?
Oh, it's hard to answer that question. So I think some of the learnings that I was out there was just a general cultural mindset. So if you're remote working with someone who is a Silicon Valley native, that's just going to rub off anyway.
Right.
Like there's just something nice sometimes around being in the same room on a whiteboard, just kicking something around.
100%, there's just something about
that. I think that in terms of us as a product team, you know, we've embraced for remote working. You know, most of us on the team have got a family, kids, other things that are part of your life. you know, work is obviously super important, but you've got other things going on as well. You blend those two bits together. So it may be the case that some days you get up early and you work early, and then maybe you do something family time in the middle of the day. We're really fortunate as a team that we can do that. Other kind of areas of the business, whether if you're talking to customers, you're a bit more on their time scales. Mm. So things are different. But I think really the backbone for all of this, and what, you know, many companies have had to accelerate the plans, is around that virtual office. You know, you've kind of gone from a physical office to that virtual office. And I think having that and leveraging that is incredibly useful, whether that be Slack, Microsoft Teams, or whatever it may be. Mm. That kind of gives you that baseline foundation that if you are at home and other people in the office, you're not then a second-class citizen.
Yeah.
You can be you and you're an equal peer, and you can contribute no matter what that is. And I think that mindset shift has kind of been forced a little bit on some people. And I think, but perhaps right now, maybe rebelling against it a little bit, where people are keen to get back to that, you know, that we're kind of like, in terms of like an elastic band, springing back a little bit more towards, I desperately want to be in the office and around people. I think what we're going to see in the next 6, 12, 18 months is probably that elastic band settling down a little bit, which will be a much more balanced. So work from home sometimes, work from the office other times, but you're not missing out, you're not losing out, whether that be in productivity, in awareness, knowledge, anything like that, you know, because you've got that virtual office backbone, everything else is fine.
I completely agree. It will be really interesting in the next like 18 months or 2 years, just to see what it's like, how the dust settles, basically. I remember when everyone had to work from home overnight, pretty much, wasn't it? It's kind of crazy, wasn't it? And everyone was absolutely loving it for 2 weeks and then thought, oh no, I actually want to see some people now. But it's weird because some people absolutely adore working from home and other people absolutely adore working from the office. So it'll be weird to see, or interesting to see, where that balance naturally sets for people.
Yeah, all you can really do is, like, a part of a company, maybe as a leader, but maybe just part of, you know, being an individual contributor, is just keep your eyes and ears open. You know, if the sense is that people are struggling because they've not got that human contact, then maybe you need to think about what you're doing as a team to kind of move more in that direction. If people are struggling to cope with being in the office and the commute and all the rest of it, then you kind of maybe go slightly the other way. But I think it's very, I guess it's part of your culture. It's individual and it's a team. Just kind of listen and learn and adapt. You know, there's none of this stuff is written down that you have to do X or Y. I think that's a challenge for me, is when you see a CEO of a large company come down with an edict that says we're going to do X, Y, Z now. I think that some parts of the business will be fine with that, and other parts will struggle. And I think that global edict is, you can understand why it happens, but it just feels like it's the wrong approach. You know, every team has responsibilities to themselves and the wider business, you know, and really empower that team to satisfy those. And if that team's missing the mark, you know, if that team's not engaging with the rest of the business, then that's a conversation you need to have. But really kind of empower the team to figure it out for themselves, really.
It's really good advice, Rich. Yeah, like I said, I could really, we could just talk all day, really. But like I mentioned, I can't believe you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time here. I'm sure you're incredibly busy. So I'll let you go for now. But thanks so much for coming on the show, Rich. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Certainly, if anyone's interested in continuing the conversation or talking further or interest in Surmise itself, then yeah, just reach out.
Absolutely. You'll have to come back on the show in maybe 6 months' time or something, just to see where Surmise is at. And, you know, as we mentioned, things are happening really quickly, so it'd be really cool to see what developments you made and maybe have a technical conversation around that in the future.
Yeah, sounds great.
Excellent.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Ben.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks, Rich. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.